Thank you very much, Adrian. That's very kind of you to invite me here to launch this report. Now, let me first give a bit of a plug for this report. I've only received my glossy hard copy today, but I've had a copy of it for a while. It's a great piece of work. There's a lot of really outstanding contributions to it. I'd particularly thank Serco for sponsoring it, but in particular acknowledge the really outstanding contribution that Gary Sturgis has made in there, his paper on the history of water management and water governance was, I found, extremely informative. Mike Maritz's paper on sustainable water management is urban water management is also a very valuable contribution, and it's particularly so because it comes from Perth, which is the city in Australia, the big city in Australia, that has best managed the consequences of water scarcity, which Perth, of course, has been the canary in the climate change coal mine, as you all know. Many of you have heard me make this observation before, but in the last 8 or 9 years, Perth's rainfall has declined by 21%, I think, is the figure most quoted, and the stream flow, however, has declined by 64%. So massive decline in surface water resources. Perth has dealt with it through a range of measures, and that's been terrifically effective for them, and they've set an example to pity of forward thinking. It's pity other big cities haven't emulated it. Jim Cox and Richard Warner's paper on pricing. James Cox, of course, coming from his position at IPART, has a particular insight into pricing reform in New South Wales, and that transition from water rates to a focus on volumetric charging has been particularly valuable. So I could go on. Chris Evans has got a great paper here too. They're all good, and I commend it to you. This will be a very important contribution to the sum of knowledge on water. We're all endeavouring to add to that. In the last year, as you know, the Australian government have published a number of important papers on water matters, the most recent one being the Marsden Jacobs paper on urban water in Australia, which I would also commend to you. It's available on my website and the Prime Minister and Cabinet Department website as a download. Now, ladies and gentlemen, water is the topic of the day, topic of the hour, because we are so short of it. Right around Australia, our cities, our towns, our farmers, our great agricultural regions are short of water. We are going through a dreadful drought. It is debatable whether it is the worst drought we've had since records begin. I don't know that a lot turns on that. It's certainly none of us are old enough, looking around the room, to remember one that was any worse. In the last year, the inflows into the Murray River were about half their previous all-time low. Now, we recognise that in Australia, stream flows are volatile. The deviation from the mean, or indeed the median, is very substantial. But these flows last year, in this past water year, are at a level that has had the consequence of meaning that the ratio between the highest flow inflows into the Murray and the lowest flow has gone from a ratio of 15 to 1 to a ratio of 30 to 1. Think about that. Just in 1 year, that's the increase in volatility that you then have to build into your models. Now, the Australian government, and the Prime Minister in particular, have been, in Paul Kelly's words, prescient about water. John Howard has been focused on the water challenges of this nation for longer than any politician currently in office. He set up the National Water Initiative, built that up over many years. It finally signed in 2004, and that represents the blueprint by which all Australian governments now are committed to developing a secure and sustainable water future for Australia. We often complain about the NWI, or all of us do. We're very self-critical, but it is regarded around the world by water commentators and writers and no less than The Economist magazine as being the gold standard of water management to which other nations should aspire. But we aspire to do better, and nobody is more committed to better performance on water, a more secure water future, and a more sustainable water future than the Prime Minister. And that is why some weeks ago he announced a plan, a new national plan for water security. This plan, which has often been described as the $10 billion 10-point plan, sets out to take the area of our nation which uses most of our water, agriculture and irrigated agriculture in particular, to make an investment in that sector which will ensure that it becomes, over time, the most efficient irrigated agriculture in the world. It is simply a matter of making the commitment to reform and to investment, and we are committing $10 billion over 10 years to achieve that. At the moment, about 70% of all the water that is used in Australia for consumptive use, all the water that's used by we humans, is used by irrigated agriculture. And the wastages are enormous, as many of you know, and I can see many distinguished irrigators here, some of whom don't have any water to waste at the moment, but nonetheless, all of you know that our irrigation practices in many places are very inefficient. Often as much as 30% of the water can be lost before it even gets to the farm gate. In some cases, more. In some cases, that water loss, particularly if it's running through sandy country, as you'd see in the Harvey Irrigation Area south of Perth, that water loss can occur in only a few kilometres and to no effect, to no benefit. The reality is we must use water efficiently. We must make every drop count. The Prime Minister has put on the table a plan that will enable us to do that. But most importantly, perhaps even more significantly than the $10 billion, is the commitment to deal with what has been one of the greatest anomalies in our constitutional arrangements since our nation was born. For longer than Australia was a nation, going right back into the late 19th century, far-sighted politicians, far-sighted farmers, thinkers and writers were saying the interstate waters, be they groundwater or surface water, should be managed by the national government. As Sir Josiah Simon said in 1898, the Melbourne Convention, he said, "In the name of all that is federal, surely the River Murray must be under the jurisdiction of the federal government." That plea from that distinguished South Australian — the South Australians have always had a very keen insight into river management, being at the end of the line, or the end of the drain, as they say in Adelaide — that was met with a rejoinder from Sir George Reid, the well-padded New South Wales Premier, who said, you should have no concern. Throw yourself on our charity. We'll look after you as we always have done. Well, they've discovered how generously they've been looked after. The reality is that, notwithstanding the National Water Initiative, notwithstanding all the best intentions in the world, you cannot run a massive interstate water system which is the home to approximately 40 or 50% of all of our agricultural output. You cannot run that system between four states. You can try, and we've done that for over 100 years, and it has not succeeded. Everybody acknowledges the system is not working. And over the last year, as I moved around rural New South Wales and Queensland and South Australia and Victoria, everybody would say, if only we were writing the Constitution today, we'd put all the interstate water under Commonwealth control. I've never met a single person who did not express that view. And then that sentiment is followed by a sigh. Well, I guess it's all too hard. You can't, unscramble the omelette. John Howard is the first Prime Minister of Australia to have the courage to take this anomaly, this dysfunctional mismanagement, out of the too hard basket and say, now is the time to act. And he has put a proposal on the table that is audacious, but it is vital for our water security, because it will enable us to run all of those rivers, all of those groundwater systems as one, run them on a sustainable basis. And we hope that the states, who've expressed varying degrees of support over the last few weeks, we hope that the states will be able to refer the powers that the Prime Minister has sought from them this Friday in Canberra. It's vital that they do, because really time is running out for our rivers. We have to deal with over-allocation. We have to deal with inefficient irrigation practices. Only a national approach can do it. The money we have put on the table enables us to do that. It will ensure that we can end the over-allocation across the basin, and it will ensure that at the same time as we end that over-allocation, which will of course be informed by the CSIRO study that is currently underway, reviewing the sustainable yields in all of the valleys and systems across the basin, it will ensure at the same time as we address over-allocation that we increase the security of irrigated agriculture. Many of our opponents, particularly in the Labor Party, I saw Mr Shorten had an article in The Australian today expressing these sentiments. Many of our opponents in the Labor Party basically want to shut down irrigated agriculture. They have the same approach to irrigation as they do to coal mining. It's a problem, shut it down. Kill it off. We shouldn't grow rice or cotton, they say. Shut it down. That is not the answer to our water future. That is the council of despair. And it shows a tragic lack of understanding of the way Australia's rivers work in the minds of many people on the left. They look at our water resources as though it were a bathtub. They look at the bathtub and they say, gosh, there needs to be another inch in the bathtub. We better turn the tap on and fill it up, and then everything will be all right. Or there's been too much water taken out of the bathtub and we'll have to put some back in. But our river systems are alive. They are dynamic. They change all the time. We have the most volatile, variable, unpredictable, capricious, call them what you will, stream flows in the world. There is no other continent that has water availability as unpredictable as ours. And what that means is that there is a complementarity, a potential for a win-win between the environment and between agriculture. Why is that? Think of the Murray River, and if you think of the Murray River, the Darling River, the same observations can be made. These are big, long, lazy, flat systems. They are floodplain systems. From the wall of the Hume Dam at Albury down to Wellington, where the River Murray goes into Lake Alexandrina and then into the sea, there is a fall of less than 200 metres in elevation. And that distance travelled, that river length, is more than 2,500 kilometres. The tables on which you are sitting are steeper than the River Murray. It is as flat, it is flatter than any billiard table that hasn't been levelled with a laser. So that means that it moves slowly, and when there is water available, it floods. And the same comments can be made about almost all of our inland rivers. So it's a floodplain system. Now, what we have done in regulating the rivers and taking all the spring and winter rains and storing them in dams, to instead of them running down the river at that time, we store them in the dams and we release them in summer for irrigation. But what we've done is we've turned the natural hydrology of the rivers on its head. And so the river is running bank full when it should be low, and it's low when it should be spreading out and fluttering and watering those floodplain environments. So what we need, however, is to balance the security of irrigation and the needs of the environment. When do those floodplains need water? When do the red gums need water? When do all those floodplains along the upper reaches of the Darling need water? They need water when there is water around. They don't need water in a drought. In a drought, in natural conditions, there'd be nothing in the river at all. There would be the River Murray. If we were in natural conditions today, the River Murray would just be a series of water holes. Series of, you'd imagine them to be billabongs, in effect. Just disconnected pools of water. There wouldn't be a flow in the river. There's only a flow in the river because water's being released from dams. So what the environment needs, when the environment needs more water, is when there is water about. And when you talk to the environmental managers, they will talk about wanting to have the capacity to put a few more gigalitres on top of a flood. So there's water coming down the river. They want to put a bit more water on top of that from an environmental store, open some regulators and enable a red gum forest, might be Barmer Millawarra, it might be down at Chowilla, anywhere along the system, and allow it to get a drink. In other words, replicate as best we can the natural conditions. So what that means is, as we acquire water back for the environment, and under our plan we'll do that largely through irrigation efficiencies, because we will share the water savings with the irrigators, so we will be building up a substantial environmental store of water through irrigation efficiencies, and through purchases from willing sellers. As we build up that environmental water store, it will mean we have the capacity to give the environment a drink when it needs a drink and when it's expecting a drink, and also have the capacity to ensure greater water security in the really dry times when the red gums are not expecting a drink and wouldn't normally get one, but the irrigators need to be able to hang on, particularly those, of course, with permanent plantings. So this is a visionary scheme. It offers the potential to get our irrigated agriculture sector right, to make it healthy, not to kill it, as many people on the left would do, but to make it stronger, to make it more resilient, to ensure that if, as all of the forecasts indicate, if we are indeed moving into drier and hotter times, and that is certainly the assumption all of my thinking is based on, if that be right, and the evidence says it is, then if we need to have a more resilient system, irrigated agriculture system. So we hope that on Friday the states will see the wisdom of this proposal and support it. It is a historic moment. There has never been a more important statement about the future of water in Australia than that made by John Howard on the 25th of January. It's been met with near universal support. It's a great opportunity. It would be a tragedy, not just for us, but for our children and our grandchildren and their children, if we were to miss it. These opportunities do not come around every day. It's taken 107 years of federation for one Prime Minister to be prepared to take this out of the too hard basket and act. It would be a tragedy if the states, through a failure of being able to reach agreement between themselves or through some sort of political game in the lead up to the federal election, were to put this issue back into the too hard basket. A tragedy for us and for many generations to come. Let me say a few words now just about urban water, because I know that is the focus of your paper, and indeed I spoke at some length about urban water to this audience last year, and started off with a discussion of Roman water and aqueducts and the writings of Julius Sextus Frontinus, which is another great water expert who I'd recommend to you. Urban water is the most frustrating part of our water challenge. It is so frustrating because it is so fixable. At the end of the day, the amount of water that is available for use by an irrigator at Shepparton or at Mildura or at Deniliquin is subject to the rain and the rain and the runoff. We can use the water more efficiently, and we will. We can make sure that we have a greater environmental store, and we will. But in the final analysis, if it doesn't rain, there's not much you can do about it. Our cities, every single one of them, has the capacity to be drought-proofed. It is simply a matter of investment. We have available to us today a number of options, desalination and recycling being two very obvious ones and topical ones, which enable us to secure substantial supplies of water in a non-climate dependent way, so that you have the water whether it rains or not. And recycling and desalination are on the agenda of every major city in Australia as a consequence. Perth again has led the way on both counts. Queensland has commissioned a desalination plant at Tugan, and obviously you're familiar with the debate about recycling and desalination here in Sydney. But the tragedy of urban water in Australia has been the failure to invest. It beggars belief, for example, that in 1995 in Sydney, a decision was taken not to expand our water supply by the then Premier, the newly elected Premier, Mr Carr. He didn't want to build a new dam, didn't want to raise the dam wall on the major storage at Warragamba. Fair enough. Let's accept that was a reasonable decision. But then he did nothing else. What did he imagine? What did Mr Carr imagine? Did he imagine the city would stop growing? Did he imagine people would be able to live without water? Or did he imagine that there was going to be a dramatic change in the climate and we would move into some sort of monsoonal environment where it would rain at the level that it does in the tropics? What was he thinking? What were they thinking? That is why we're short of water in Sydney today, because of a failure to invest. And then if you look at the city that is shortest of water, whose water challenge is the most severe, and I'm talking now, of course, of Brisbane and greater southeast Queensland, you had again exactly the same pattern. In 1989, Mr Goss was elected as Labor Premier. His Chief of Staff and Director of the Cabinet was Kevin Rudd. They decided to cancel the dam, the Wolfdene Dam. Very good dam site, relatively long, relatively narrow valley. Cancelled that dam. Now there were arguments against it. There always are. There is no dam that is popular with anybody upstream of it, let's face it, because they don't want their land to be inundated. They're perfectly reasonable concerns. All dams are unpopular with some people. So they decided not to build that dam. And then, once again, they did nothing else. What were they thinking? Mr Rudd's never answered that question. What was he thinking? Did he think Brisbane would cease to grow? Did he think southeast Queensland would grind to a halt? Did he think it would suddenly start raining more in southeast Queensland? What was going through their mind? And I'll tell you what was going through his mind and Mr Carr's mind. It was short-termism. Let's not bother. Something will turn up. It'll rain next year. We don't have to plan for the future. And or we'll be long out of politics by the time this chicken comes home to roost. Well, that may have been true for Mr Carr. It's obviously not true for Mr Rudd. Young men like him, as he was then, should always be very careful about not augmenting cities' water infrastructure when you think about it. Something you should only make decisions like that when you're very ancient, I think, if you want to avoid getting caught up with it. But that's the reason we're short of water in these two cities. It is that simple. And now we see a scramble to build infrastructure. There are projects being built at the moment, water projects being built at the moment, for which there is no business plan. No business plan. Can you imagine that? Big projects are being built on a cost-plus basis. They haven't been let out to competitive tender. It's a panic. We will have billions of dollars of water infrastructure built, I'm sure, but the incompetence with which it is being executed and the blind panic with which it is being undertaken means that we will pay many more billions of dollars for that infrastructure than it is actually worth. And the reason for that is the failure to plan ahead, the failure to look for the future. And there I just conclude a contrast between two Labor governments in Queensland and New South Wales who did not look to the future, who decided not to augment their city's water supplies, and the price for that is being paid today in panic and water scarcity and restrictions and no doubt billions of dollars spent that needn't have been spent. And I contrast that, on the one hand, with John Howard, who has set out a plan, a 10-year plan, to take on the biggest user of water, the irrigated agriculture, to take that on.